Hi, I'm James Wyatt, one of the lead designers for 4th edition and author of Eberron Trilogy, The Draconic Prophecies, and you're listening to The Tome Show.
Welcome to The Tome, episode 59. The Tome is a D&D news, reviews, and interview show, and I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. In this episode, we will be getting a little random with Miscellaneous 4th Edition. Welcome again to episode 59 of The Tome, Miscellaneous 4th Edition Chat with Chris Engler. When I originally set up my, 8-part series of chats with Chris Engler, wow, that's a lot, I broke everything down into 7 different categories, and some of the tidbits of information and news I had just didn't quite fit into any of those 7 categories. So, we have our miscellaneous category. So today you're going to be listening to Chris Engler and I chatting about some more 4th edition news. Remember, if this talk starts getting you a little bit excited, don't forget to head over to the Tome's Amazon store and pre-order your 4th edition books now. I know I've already pre-ordered my books. I happen to know that Amazon's pre-order price right now is very good, but I have noticed it was better a few weeks ago, so I wonder if it's not going to creep up a little bit. So make sure you pre-order early. And do it through the Tome's Amazon store. You get the great Amazon prices and the great Amazon customer service. Plus, you get to support this podcast so that I can afford to keep putting these things out. And hopefully you enjoy it enough that it's worth you using my store to buy something that you're probably going to buy anyway. Anyway, enough me shilling and begging for your support and money. I'm going to move on. Today we have more chat with Chris Engler and I, like I talked about before. It is worth noting, like usual, that this episode was recorded a while ago. All of the information in it is correct, although if you're one of those people that's a news hound who's out there hunting for every scrap of information about 4th edition, sort of like I've been, then a lot of it's going to be a month or two out of date. So do remember that. And for those of you that aren't out there scouring the internet for news about 4th edition, then that's exactly what these kinds of shows are for, to help bring everybody up to speed a little bit into what's going on. Obviously, with the D&D experience reports that Jeffrey Wynn brought us, you should have a pretty good idea of what's going on with 4th edition and whether or not it sounds like something that you're interested in. Plus, of course, I've got some more plans to talk more 4th edition as time goes by. Okay, I just wanted to sneak in here real quick. I'm recording this as I'm editing. In the 24 hours or so between me recording the intro and outro for this episode and me editing it together, there has been some new developments in the 4th edition, what is being called the Game System License, the GSL, which is replacing the OGL, just came out. So we may be talking a bit about the GSL in the conversation with Chris Engler. And that information now is incorrect after my whole spiel about how everything is actually correct. They announced one thing in January, and they announced something else just yesterday that contradicts that and says, okay, we're no longer doing a two-tiered system where some people get to buy in early. Instead, the new way it's going to work is the game system license will be available for free to third-party publishers in June. And the earliest you're going to see third-party books coming out for the new system is in October. So there's no more early buy-in. There's no more $5,000 fee to buy into the system early and to be able to produce things earlier than everybody else and then get it free later. That's not the way it's going to work anymore. We just found this out, so this is sort of breaking news. I sort of wanted to get this out there and let you guys know what's going on so that you didn't listen to the podcast and then go back and say, wait a minute, this is completely incorrect. So there you go. Breaking news just in the last 24 hours, which who knows when you're listening to this, but in the last 24 hours from when I'm putting the episode together. In any case, back to me introducing me and Chris talking about these things that I'm clearing up. There you go. But without me chattering on and on and on and on, let me just go ahead and throw it over to myself and Chris Engler, talking about our miscellaneous little bits about 4th edition. Okay, so Chris Engler and myself, we're back again, and we're going to continue our chat about 4th edition. We have one last new category of information for 4th edition to chat about. I've just sort of listed it as my other category. It's sort of the hodgepodge of information that didn't quite fit in. A lot of it may have to do with, has a lot to do with sort of licensing and the business end of things that some players probably just don't care much about. But for those of us that want to know what might be going on with the game, and what might be happening with it as far as third-party people and that kind of stuff, there's some interesting information out there about that too. First of all, to get it out of the way, there is some question, I guess, about how is the 4th edition of D&D going to affect D20 Modern. And they've said that they are planning an update for D20 Modern that they'll announce later on, but it's not a focus at this time. They're not real worried about D20 Modern. They're just trying to figure out how to get everything out smoothly for D&D.
I guess the same would apply to D20 Future.
I would assume so, yeah.
I mean, those are pretty specialized. I own D20 Modern and Urban Arcana. I think it's a cool product, but I can definitely understand that D&D is probably all they should be focusing on right now with some of the big changes they're planning.
Right. And they do say that when D20 Modern does come out, it will also have a free SRD. That's the system reference document, just like it does now. However, the way the SRD is going to work for D&D is going to be different. So I imagine the SRD for D20 Modern is going to be a little bit different too.
Yeah, you'd think.
The way the new SRD is going to work, the way the old one worked is it basically said, here's a list of all the rules that you can use. Any publisher can use. It's free. Anybody can pick it up. It's sort of, this is the open source part of the game. And so that allowed people to go out and make their own D&D products without working for Wizards. And also allowed people to take the SRD and publish it online for free so that you can get out there and play D&D without ever actually buying the books, which I think is where they're trying to make some changes from what I understand. The new SRD sounds like it's going to be a lot less detailed, I guess. It's going to be more of a reference document that says you can use rules about X, Y, and Z, but it's not going to actually cite those rules in the document. So you won't be able to republish those rules, but you can use them in your game. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that was well explained.
Okay. So, I just want to make it clear, because that means that you won't have websites out there where you can just go out there and get most of the information from the player's handbook and the DMG like there is now. Basically, they don't want people to be playing for free anymore. They want you to go out and actually buy those books.
I think that's a reasonable line of thought. I mean, I'm personally surprised, because there's some, I mean, you know, not taking anything away from anybody, they're operating completely within the confines of the law, but I mean, there's some really robust websites out there that marked up the SRD in some really impressive and innovative ways. But at the same time, I mean, you really could just, you know, if you were sitting at a table with a laptop, you know, you would have all the rules you need to play D&D without ever having to buy a book. I mean, it's amazing to me the time and effort that people have put into just making those documents available.
Well, and honestly, it's been a boon for me, because I probably visit one of those websites daily just to look up a little rules thing here or a stat there, that kind of stuff, just real fast, because it's so much faster and easier than lugging around books and having to look it up there. But I suppose they want to continue giving you that, the ability to do that. They just want you to get it from them. And that's why they're taking the SRD and changing the way it works and then giving you D&D Insider, where you can get all that stuff from them.
Yeah, that's probably a good conclusion.
There will also continue being the OGL, although I think I heard that they were going to change the name of the OGL. Did you hear that?
I didn't hear if they were changing the name. All I heard about was the sort of staggered price structure.
Right. That's been sort of the more recent news. I thought I had heard, and this might be in the category of rumor, and I've tried to avoid rumor in terms of the kind of stuff that we're chatting about, and stick with just with official known information. But I had thought I heard that they were going to change the name away from OGL and change it to something else. But they are doing the OGL, which is the open gaming license that allows third-party publishers to print D&D books. So that's why Green Ronin can go out there and print a D&D book, or Goodman Games, or Paizo, or whoever. They can go out there and they can print it. There's still going to be a license like this. But if you want to get in now, you have to pay $5,000 for it. If you want to wait until after the books have come out, then you can get in on it for free.
Right, and I think you still, even if you pay the $5,000, because the 4th edition D&D books are coming out in May, the earliest you're allowed to publish, if you pay that fee, is August of this year.
Right. So they don't want anybody to steal their thunder.
But I think that's wise.
But they do want people to be able to get products out right after the launch.
Right, and I've heard some negative reaction to that, you know, people saying it's discriminatory, but you know, I don't adhere to that line of thinking, because you know, one of the lessons learned from the original SRD, even though it was very, you know, ambitious and generous and, you know, a whole new way to produce role-playing games, you know, I think the complete lack of quality control really well, it was detrimental to gaming stores because they didn't know what to stock, and that left with a lot of stuff that they took a chance on that people really didn't take a shine to. So by having this staggered thing, what I think it will ensure, you know, you mentioned really good, well-established publishing houses like Green Ronin and Goodman Games. You know, it's going to really set them up as sort of, you know, the top shelf of third party offerings for D&D.
Yeah, and I'm not, I guess, that knowledgeable of the way these things work. I know I heard on another podcast, 2d6 Feet in a Random Direction, they discussed this a little bit in their recent episode. And one of the things they mentioned is that, you know, $5,000 for some of these companies can actually be a pretty significant fee. Because you have to assume that if you're going to pay that $5,000, you only get a head start of a few months, and you have to be able to use that few months to make all that money back. You know, and $5,000, that could be the cost of a full run of a book, for a full print run, from what they say.
Well, I don't know if I don't agree with the idea that, you know, you have to make it back in that 4-month window. I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, one of the negative things that Wizards has kind of foisted onto the gaming industry in general is they've sort of got people accustomed to, you know, a periodical model, you know, where they, you know, you stock a book right when it comes out, you stock a certain number of copies, and you sell out of all those copies, and, you know, you don't really stock it again. That's a model that applies to magazines and publications like that, whereas, you know, you go to a bookstore, I mean, you publish a book, you know, it'll be on the shelf for, you know, years.
Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of that just comes down to the business model of and how it works. They don't want to go back for a second printing if they don't think they're going to sell them all.
Right. But, I think that, you know, Wizards is really trying to reestablish itself as, you know, okay, you know, D&D, that is the gold standard for role-playing games. I mean, whether you like D&D or not, you know, that's a different discussion entirely. But they're sort of saying, look, if you want to get on the bandwagon and you want to be thought of as one of the premier publishers and you want to ride the wave of a new edition, you know, you're going to have to belly up to the bar and show some kind of financial commitment to that.
Right, and I think honestly, it doesn't. I don't get angry about the news, this system at all, because if you want to get into it for the low cost, that's going to be an option for you. You just have to wait a little bit.
Right. And I mean, if $5,000 is, you know, a legitimate financial barrier to you, I mean, then as a company, you know, that speaks to, you know, your level of commitment to the product. You know, if you were somebody, I mean, I'm sure a company like Green Lonene, I mean, I don't know what their financial situation is like, but, you know, that's probably viewed, even if it is a hardship on them, which I don't know if it is or not, you know, they're probably viewing that as, you know, okay, this is going to be a necessary cost of doing business. We're going to have to come up with this so that we can maintain the visibility of, you know, one of the top shelf publishers.
I imagine it means you're going to have a lag in terms of PDF publishing, though. Because there's a lot of small companies that don't make a lot of money. And that's just part of that business, that end of the business, is that PDFs don't make as much money. So it'll be a while, you know, it'll be the 4 to 6 months before you end up seeing a lot of those cheaper PDF products coming out, which is fine. Give some people some time to get to know the core rules before they worry about going out and buying all the extra stuff that's coming out.
Yeah, and I think most PDF-only companies, I mean, they're one- or two-man shops that are just sort of, you know, subsidizing a hobby as opposed to, you know, a business that's trying to go out there and make money.
Yeah. We also have some information about what was called the STL. The STL was the license that basically said that third-party publishers could put the D20 logo on their products. And they basically just said, you know what, we're not going to do it anymore. We're not going to have give third-party publishers the logo to put on it. It was too much of a pain and a hassle to do. We want the logo to stand for quality, but we don't want to have to stand as, you know, judge and jury over other people's products. So they just said, we're going to use it for ourselves. And, you know, pretty much apparently nobody's been really using it in the last 5 years or so anyway. So they just said, we're not going to bother with it.
Yeah, it's kind of ironic because they wanted that to be, you know, a brand for quality, but it's almost a warning.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'll be honest, you know, when I see D20 on a supplement, you know, it makes me think twice because of all the, you know, not up to snuff stuff that came out.
Right. Well, and I obviously we're not going to have that issue with fourth edition now because the D20 logo will still exist. They say it's going to get an update. It's going to look a little different, but it's only going to be put on Wizards products or the Wizards license products. So we won't have that gambit of is this good or not, because you know it's coming from a company that generally has good quality.
That's a little strange that they'd even keep the logo, because I mean, they put the Wizards logo, so now they're going to have two logos that only appear on Wizards books.
Yeah. Well, I imagine you might see some of it on some of their licensed products that they license out to other people, like some of the Kinzer company stuff. If they license out Dragonlance again, then you might see it on that, even if somebody else is doing it. It might work that way.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They've also promised us, they've assured us, and as much as people even to this day continue to not believe this, they have been very clear that there will not be a 4.5 edition.
Well, I just think that's a weird claim to make because, I mean, depending on how you want to read into that, I mean, that's tantamount to saying, you know, you can interpret that and say, well, you know, this will be the last edition of Dungeons & Dragons, and I have a hard time believing that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
And so, I mean, you can't tell me that, you know, I mean, Wizards is, you know, made up of human beings like every other company in the world. I mean, if there's some, you know, big, you know, not to cast aspersions or be a doomsayer, but I mean, if there's some big glaring flaw with fourth edition that you know, just passes them by that they don't realize, you can't tell me that they won't do something to address it. I mean, I'm assuming that statement was made for the benefit of people that were cranky over the fact that 3.5 came out and, you know, in their words, made their 3.0 books obsolete.
Right. And I think that's exactly what it is. I think what happened was there was such a strong negative reaction to 3.5 just because of the timing that they want to assure people that they don't want to try to, that it's not just a marketing scheme and they don't want to just rip people off and come out with another version of the edition in a few years.
Again, I just think that's a strange statement to make because it's, you know, it's drawing attention to a gaffe they made in the past.
Well, and I think they're just trying to build confidence that they learned from their mistakes. But of course, it wouldn't be that difficult for them to just, instead of having a 4.5 edition, just put out a new edition and call it 5th.
Exactly.
So I think basically they've promised that they won't make the same marketing gaffe. It doesn't necessarily mean that they won't do it. They just, they won't call it that this time.
Right. I mean, that's really all that they're saying is, you know, you won't see a book with the numerals 4.5 on it, which, I mean, okay.
For what that means, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
They do say that we're going to know everything that we want to know about the new game before we have to go out and spend any money on it. So that's good news, I think. They're going to, over the, and they've released a lot of information already, and they're going to continue releasing information as we get closer and closer to the to their product release. And they say that anything that we want to know about the game, we're going to know it without having to go out and buy the books.
Yeah, I mean, great. Not much.
And
that winds up being true, that's a very positive thing.
Yeah, that just seems like good marketing to me. I mean, you want people to know what they're getting into.
And they are, you know, I mean, if you subscribe to their podcast, I mean, they're speaking very candidly about it. So, you know, there is a lot of information available. So, I mean, reality reflects that statement.
Yeah, so far. I mean, some of it's been, you know, more popular and more revealing than others. And some of it's been a little more unpopular, whether it because people don't like the changes or because it's just a little more cryptic, I guess.
That's a bit of a tightrope walk because, I mean, they have to, you know, let out the right amount that piques people's curiosity, but not just give away everything that, you know, when it comes out, people, you know, don't care and, you know, don't feel, you know, there's not that that rush of excitement of, you know, the new edition hitting the shelves.
Right. And then the core characters that were created for third edition, Meili and Regdar and Tordak and all those guys, there was sort of a given rule that they would show up in all of the books that came out afterwards. They've now said that they will still be around. If you liked those characters, they will still show up every now and then, but there's no longer a rule that they have to be in everything.
I laughed when I read that. Like, are people really that attached to those characters?
I know I'm not, because I've been playing the game so much longer than those characters were existed, you know? So, and half of them, you know, have sort of faded away and nobody knows who they are anyway.
Like, I mean, you know, if they killed off Miley, I mean, would that cause a revolt? I would be surprised if it did. I just found that, you know, the fact that they felt the need to mention that amusing. I don't know, maybe there's a Regdar fan club out there that I'm not aware of.
Yeah, and it seems odd to me that anybody even cares that much, because it's not like we have stories about those characters. You know, if there was something that had me buying into and caring about those characters, I guess it might be more important to me, but they're just the basis for pictures in the books, you know?
They're examples.
Right, as long as the artwork is good, I don't particularly care what their names are or whether they're consistent.
Yeah.
And then the last little bit is just a quick version of some of the products that are coming out in the next several months leading up to 4th edition. I've got a whole list of the schedule of products and when they're coming out and what products are coming out and some of the costs for some of these books and that kind of thing. And I will post that into the forums. So if people want to hop over to the website at thetomeshow.com and click on the link for the forums, they can see the whole list. But we do have some just general comments. First of all, there have already started to be changes in the D&D Minis game that is reflecting some of the rules of 4th edition. And so if you want to get a sort of a preview, a hint as to what 4th edition rules are going to look like, D&D Miniatures has actually already gone there.
So have they decided for that game what existing miniatures they're going to keep and which ones they're going to retire?
That is not something that I know. I have actually been chatting with a listener recently, and he's talking about maybe doing some regular discussions on D&D miniatures. But D&D minis is not something that I play. So it's not,
yeah, me either.
It's not something I've paid a lot of attention to. And part of me says, I really like the idea of D&D miniatures and the game behind it, but I don't like the idea of going out and buying a bunch of randomized boxes of miniatures.
Yeah, I got the impression that, you know, I remember hearing a lot, and I'm, you know, this wasn't necessarily from Wizards, but people talking about how great they are to use in your games. But, you know, I agree with you, you know, I mean, you know, the broad theme of a pack that you're buying, but a lot of stores were smart enough, you know, and when people wanted to dump their commons, you know, they have, you know, the term I always heard it once and I thought it was funny. You know, they've got the bucket of thugs that you can go and buy for, you know, a dollar each or whatever. And so if you need your 10 orcs or whatever, you can go get those.
Yeah, and I haven't been into a game that with a collectible aspect since I quit playing Magic back in my junior high days. So the idea of having a game that's collectible like that is just not appealing to me. I don't want to play a game where the winner is whoever spends the most money.
Right.
And so that's why I haven't really gotten into D&D miniatures, even though the rest of the concept sort of appeals to me.
Some of the miniatures, though, for plastic pre-painted, I mean, it's amazing what they can come out with. Like, you know, when you look at the advances that they made, just some molding and stuff like that. Like, they have one for the purple worm. That's just an amazing, amazing miniature. The fact that that's just a pre-painted, sculpted miniature, I mean, it's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. And well, and some of the dragons, those big dragon minis are just exceptional. One of the guys I play with has bought up just a ton of D&D minis, and so we use them in our game all the time. And he's got a couple of those dragons that we sort of set up in the background, and every now and then we'll torture another player by taking their mini and sticking it in the dragon's mouth. And you know. But, no, I mean, they are very, very nice products. I just wish that there was an easier way to buy the ones that I need. You know, if I've got an adventure with a bunch of lizard folk, I don't want to have to go digging through a bin. I would just like to buy a box of lizard folk.
Yeah, I know Reaper Miniatures, not too long ago, back in the summer, they came out with a line of pre-painteds, but they were highly touted. And I remember my local store brought them in initially, but they didn't catch on here.
Yeah, and I haven't seen a lot of them around either, but it's something that I've always been wanting to check out, and I just never got around to it.
I think it's part of the, you know, initially it seemed like a good idea that they were just producing miniatures that weren't, you know, attached to a specific game or a specific universe, but, you know, maybe that was their undoing, you know, that, you know, people are just like, oh, okay, those are neat, but what were they for?
Yeah. So anyway, going on with the schedule, we also have an adventure coming out called Keep on the Shadowfell that comes out in May. That is going to come out with the quick start rules. So it's going to give you the basic quick version of the rules for 4th edition so you can sort of actually start playing a 4th edition adventure before the 4th edition books come out and get a bit of a preview of how that's going to work.
Yeah, this looks to me like the substitute for the D&D box set that you see at like Walmart now. Because that's the one that's coming with a map and a few miniatures, isn't it?
Probably.
It says here, includes 3 double-sided poster maps. Oh, suitable for use with the miniatures.
Right. Yep. It's usable with miniatures, but it doesn't come with them.
So this is the starter kit.
This is your start. Well, and I think this is your starter kit for people who want to actually play the game before the books come out. That's what the quick start. And I think they got this idea from other companies. I mean, other companies have done these quick start rules books before with a little, you know, I know there's a Mutants and Masterminds one, and there's some other companies that do the same thing. If you just want to try out the game without committing yourself to buying all the core books, this is a good way of doing that.
Price is a little steep, but $30 for a quick start. Most of the other ones I've seen, you know, they try and hover at around the $10 mark.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe them sitting back on the laurels of, well, this is D&D and lots of people are going to buy it.
I guess we'll see.
Yeah. And then the last little thing to mention is that originally they had stated that the three core books would come out one each month over the summer. and they've changed that, and they said people apparently don't want to buy their books. They don't want to buy their game system one book a month. And so they've changed it to say they're all coming out at the same time. On June 6th, you can go out and buy your three core books, the Monster Manual, the DMG, and the Player's Handbook.
Well, I think that makes a lot of sense. That was one of my earliest critiques when I heard about 4th edition. It's like, okay, if you're calling these, you know, the core books and what you need to run the game, you know, you're telling me I have to wait 2 months from the date that I purchased the first one before I have enough to play the game, according to them. Like, that just didn't add up to me.
That doesn't make sense. I mean, I suppose the idea was it helps people that have the financial burden. They don't have to buy everything all at once. They can budget a little bit easier. But at the same time, it doesn't take me a month to go through the rules and figure out how to play it. So I don't need that amount of downtime with the book to actually pick it up and play the game.
And if you can't afford it, I mean, you can still wait a month, you know.
Right. Okay, well, do you have anything else to mention on our little miscellaneous group here?
No, and this is the last of our 4E news discussions, isn't it?
Well, this is the last of our 4E news from the original set of notes. At some point in time, there's some updates, I guess, with some of the other categories. It might be good to do like an update discussion in another month or so as we get more and more information, just to sort of keep people up to date. My goal, as I've stated on the episodes for these discussions, is to provide people the information, the official information that's from mostly from the Wizards website, just so we can sort of sort through all the information and they don't have to go and find it themselves, put it in one convenient location.
Right. Well, what I'm looking the most forward to seeing is their digital offerings, because, you know, I'm a crusty old jaded gamer. There's not a lot between the confines of a hardcover book that at least that I'll admit surprises me anymore. But I'm really hoping that these innovations that they're doing are going to be the kind of thing that that draws people in, and particularly draws younger sort of, you know, grade school and high school age people into the hobby, because it's a vibrant, interesting hobby that I think is among the most fulfilling. And, you know, it's one that doesn't have a lot of new people coming into it. And so just the fact that Wizards is appearing to be of the mindset that they at least want to try some new things to get people interested is a good sign for me for what's currently, you know, the most identifiable role-playing game out there.
You bet. And honestly, I'm at a point with a lot of the rules information that we have that I'm really looking forward to 4th edition in terms of the rules and the new system. And there's even been some blog posts from some people that have playtested 4th edition talking about how much they really like the rules. And obviously it's just their opinion, but they've had them and I haven't, and they're names of people that I generally trust. For example, Ari Marmel on his blog mentioned that he really likes the new rules and that they work really well. So I'm looking forward to the new system. I'm looking forward to the new rules and seeing how it works. Some of the campaign setting stuff, as a big Forgotten Realms fan, has me a little bit worried. But as far as the rules go, I'm excited about what's coming up.
Yeah, it'll be an interesting year.
It will. Well, we will come back again sometime and do an update on 4th edition. Plus, I think Chris is going to try to get on here every now and then, and we'll chat about some other things as time goes by for the show. Although, you have also become busy doing your own podcast again. You used to do one called Carpe GM, and now you're doing a new podcast. Why don't you tell us real quickly about that before we go?
Oh, wow. I get a plug. Thanks.
You bet. You bet.
Yeah, Carpe GM was my first foray into podcasting, and I went in there wide-eyed and ignorant, and after doing it for about half a year or so, it was just, I really enjoyed it, but it was too time-consuming. I committed myself to putting out a half-hour show every other week, and between that and everything else I was doing, I just found it too arduous. So took a little bit of a break, and ended Carpe GM in October and just sort of thought about, okay, do I still want to do this? And Jeff himself had a lot to do with just keeping me interested by inviting me to take part in these discussions. And just over the past week or so, I just sort of got the idea all at once of just doing a really small podcast. So WAP Caplets is going to come out at least once a week. I'm going to strive for more than once a week and just be, you know, my target length for the episode is 5 minutes. And it's going to be, you know, highly opinionated and all to do with not just role-playing games, but also board and miniatures games as well. And, you know, I'm sort of thinking of it as, you know, people listen to this and maybe people listen to an episode of WAP Caplets, hear what I have to say, and maybe that'll spark a discussion with them and their friends.
Great. And I know I've listened to the first three episodes, I guess, including the episode zero. And it sounds like a really great idea to me, just getting one topic, 5 minutes, in and out, really easy to digest sort of podcast length, just to sort of get the conversation started, and then people can take it and do with it as they please.
Yeah, because, you know, we were talking about this a little before we went on the air, but one of the mistakes that a lot of podcasters make is they release a few episodes and exhaust everything they have to say. And even though I like to hear myself talk, I guess, you know, I've just got a list of about 30 topics that I can talk about for 5 minutes. Whereas, you know, before when I was doing a half hour show, you know, it was a struggle to fill that time with meaningful information. You know, Jeff's been smart, but he's got, you know, as long as there's new D&D stuff coming out, he's going to have things to talk about.
Well, and that's one of the great things about the new idea for your show with WAP Caplets is that there's always going to be new gaming news and new things coming out that you can include. So even when you've exhausted your 30 topics, there'll be more to bring up.
That's what I'm hoping. So people can check it out at wapcaplets.net.
All right. And that is the last little bit of our discussion here about 4th edition news. And we will come back later for you and give you some more updates, I guess. And you can always keep track of some information on the website and especially over at the forums. Every now and then I'll pull out a bit of news that strikes my fancy or that gets my heckles up, and we'll chat about it there sometimes too. So thanks for joining us, and thanks to you also, Chris, and we'll talk to you again later.
Thank you.
Well, all right, there's Chris Engler from WAP Caplets and myself chatting it up about the miscellaneous news bits that we found on 4th edition. Now I'm going to point you to a bunch of folks that I think do a fabulous job for what they do and provide a service for us and sponsored the Tomes contest last year. And here is some information about Geek Label.
We're here at Geek Label Laboratories to discover if wearing quality Geek Label t-shirts will actually make you smarter. Joining us today is Rodney.
Blinky lights, pretty.
Now we'll outfit Rodney in a sweet as love Geek Label t-shirt. Now we'll introduce Rodney to Schrodinger's cat in the hopes that he will successfully explain the inadequacy of early quantum mechanical theory.
Ooh, tastes like chicken.
Rodney, no.
Snack size, snack size.
Look smart and feel fly in your custom Geek Label t-shirt, ladies' tee, or any of the many styles now available, including grilling aprons. You pick the style, you pick the color, we do the rest. Will Geek Label products actually make you smarter?
Geek coherence make Rodney hungry.
No, dumbass, they're custom t-shirts. They're not magic t-shirts. Another fine product from geeklabel.com.
Okay, well, that's episode 59. As always, I want to encourage you to send your feedback or comments into thetomeshow@gmail.com. Also, hop on over to the forum and join in that conversation. You can always help the show get noticed with reviews or votes on various sites. But more than that, get out there and tell people about it. Maybe your neighbor's a little lonely and need something to do. Point them in the direction of the feed and let them listen to the show to fill the day. Word of mouth goes a long ways, and I appreciate you letting people know about the Tome. Also, another way you can support the show is hop on over to the Tome's Amazon store. The show gets part of the proceeds, and that helps keep us on the air. And you can find all of this stuff at thetomeshow.com. Also, don't forget to check out our partner podcast, Fistful of Comics and Games, and Gamers Haven at fistfulofcomics.com and canadiancrusaders.com. Links in the show notes. And as always, the Tome is a member of Goblin, the gaming broadcast network, and we are listed at rpgpodcast.com. This has been episode 59, miscellaneous 4th edition of
The Tome.